Popcorn Culture is supported by Fiji Water. Okay, y'all, it is summer, and for me personally, that means it is finally the season to use the brand new boat, where, of course, hydration is key because it is super hot out there, and we will be doing that with Fiji Water because it really is from the islands of Fiji. Drop by drop, Fiji Water collects in a sustainable ancient artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. As the water filters through the volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as any other top two premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji Water its soft, smooth taste. And gosh, soft, I love that descriptor because it is so exactly spot on. If you've ever drank Fiji Water, it is soft water to drink. And unlike some of the other premium bottled waters, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. Fiji Water really is Earth's finest water, and since 2022, its 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles have been produced in 100% recycled plastic, so you can feel proud of your choice in bottled water. Get stocked up on Fiji Water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick up some today for your next backyard party, hike, beach, pool, or lake day. It's not just water, it's Fiji Water.
Just a good old smile there.
Just a good old smile.
Sometimes I get through it all and be like, I can just give a smile.
Just a regular old face.
Just a regular old face, you know? What if people just want a regular old face?
Then it would have no mustache.
I don't know. My regular new face. Regular new face over here.
Regular new face. Hey, your outfit matches quite nicely today.
It does, yeah.
Got the green.
Got the green and the white and the gray and there's like all of it incorporated into my shoe, so it's all very nice. Yeah.
What is that hoodie, like Boston Celtics?
Yeah, the Celtics.
The Celtics. The two words that it says.
Yeah, the two words it says. Beth, I keep watching all these Celtics games and Beth is like, Celtics. She has to like think about it every time.
Well, is it not like Celtic in every other capacity and only Celtics in this capacity?
I'm sure there are other capacity in which it is Celtic, but yes, like at the concert venue you used to work at, nice. Like Celtic Women or Celtic Woman would be a show that would come.
Ah.
So I don't know. I guess I think they're pretty interchangeable, but like as far as the NBA is concerned, they're the Celtics.
It does feel like
no one's being like the Boston Celtics are back in the finals.
Right. Yeah. It feels like a great way for someone to be like obviously out of the know and not realize it until they've like said the words and it's like, no.
You tried, but you just outed yourself. You just outed yourself, man. Whoops.
Yeah. Whoopsies.
Whoopsie.
Okay.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Back in Roanoke, Ben, we have been on the road this past week.
We sure have, in a way that we really never have before.
Yeah, like in 2019... We did like a series of like movie meetups.
We did.
Where they were kind of spaced out throughout the year. We did one, like two of them were like pretty nearby, like Blacksburg and DC. And then what, like Orlando and Salt Lake? Is that what we did?
Chicago and Salt Lake.
What did I add in there?
We did Orlando the year before.
The year before is like the sample.
Yeah, December 2018.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes, but those were like go watch a movie, do a meet and greet. That was kind of it. This was a much more like intentional tour for actually our other podcast, Through the Gryffindor.
Yes. Yeah. No. And holy cow! I mean, if this wasn't such an experience, you know, like it's one thing I think on some level to just simply boil it down to the idea that, you know, like I remember thinking when I was watching the Academy Awards one year, who was the guy from Inglourious Bastards who was like the villain?
Christoph Waltz? Yeah,
yes.
Christoph Waltz. Yeah.
Okay. So I think I remember watching his acceptance speech for that role, which was just unbelievable. But I remember how nervous he looked. And I was like, that's so strange because like you're an actor. Like surely you're used to being in front of people, right? You know, this is like the very simple version of it in my head. I'm like, it never would occur to me that like an actor might be nervous in front of like a huge crowd of their, you know, peers,
who are celebrating them. Yeah,
exactly. But then like when you do zoom back, it's like, for one, it's a very, very, very different thing playing the character on a film set where you are like accustomed to that environment and everything that's associated with it, versus potentially even being like a stage performer, which might be somebody who is playing in front of a big group of people. But both of those are still going to be different from the act of being yourself.
Yeah.
You know, more so in front of a huge group of people.
Right.
So except in the awards, you know, you're not the, you know, crazy Nazi general guy from the movie. You're the person, the actor,
right?
The individual, like,
right. It's like, if you're playing a role, you can do sort of anything, because that's not you doing it, it's the character doing it.
Right. Yes. Not to mention then the Academy Award is just like, you know, the height of accolade inside of your field. So, you know, understandably nervous for having just done something that any actor probably has at one day contemplated a world where they may be on that stage.
Yeah.
All of that to say, though, it's like, not that we're anywhere near that capacity, but like, you know, I still think it's one thing to create the content that we make and have it go out into the world where, at least, you know, currently we are the only two people in this room at all.
Right.
So
yeah.
Like, you know, it's just us. So more people are out there that will ultimately hear my words than are in the room with me.
Right.
But then when you're out on tour, it's like, it's a smaller number than the total audience, but it's still a lot of people who are out there.
Yes.
And I will tell you that like the day going into the tour, like right before we left, I lost my voice.
You did. Yeah.
And I was like, no, like almost anything I can deal with. My inability to speak is going to be very difficult given a show
where you talk for an hour,
where I talk for an hour.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, like we're traveling, like everything about the experience top to bottom is new for us.
It is new, and it is like not a great scenario for like recovery. You know, you're not like in your own bed, you're not like resting in the middle of the day. You know, you're like you're in the van and you're unloading into the venue, and you're in like varying different hotels from night to night. And
yes. There was a very big difference between the version of us that walked out on stage all like polished and proper and like ready for the audience, and us 2 hours prior shoving around the heavy like merch rubber band containers, like sweating and like, you know, our hair's all flat, and you know, we're definitely like, you know, so it's really funny to like see the different stages of the day ultimately unfold.
Right. Like we're at the end of the day, we're still a pretty like small crew who's doing most of it by ourselves.
Yeah. Pretty much putting it all together. So shout out to our whole team. So Ethan, Kat, and Isabel, because they were just absolutely spectacular. And we just couldn't have done it without them, because there was just so many things that needed to happen all of the time.
Yeah.
But, the cool thing I was going to say though, is that like, I am certain in my life, there have been instances where I have experienced good nerves.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you ever have this? Like, are you aware of when the nervousness that you are feeling is something that is actually like fuel rather than like something that's holding you back?
Oh man. Sometimes it does feel like they could be like mixed together there, doesn't it? Like I'm immediately thinking like standing at the top of like Daredevil Drop at like Emerald Point, you know?
Oh yeah.
You know, where you're just like, part of you is just like, I super don't want to do it. And part of you is like, this is going to be amazing.
This is going to be epic. Yeah,
even as I think about it, I'm like, why would I ever do that again? That's the dumbest thing I could do.
Right. Yeah. So I'll
probably fall off.
Right. For context, for people who haven't been to Greensboro, North Carolina, that Daredevil's Drop, I think, is like a 5-story slide.
Yeah. It's huge.
It is huge.
It is massive.
And to this day, like when we were kids, we were like terrified of it, but we did it.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like terrified of it. And I'm like, well, I'm an adult and I know it's fine. It's,
I know. Like I've done it before.
Yeah. But the thing about that is that it's like, when it comes to it, like maybe you need the nerves to like help you go.
Yeah.
To commit. But like once you go, The slide will do the work for you. And yeah. Gravity will do the work for you. You will get to the bottom.
You will get to the bottom. Yes. Like, you will not fall out. That's not going to happen.
Right. You will get there safely, I should add.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Gravity's going to do the work.
Right. But I think when it comes to going in and delivering a performance, the difference is that, like, it's not like the lights are just going to come on and then gravity will do the rest of the work from there.
Right.
It's like the lights are going to come on. And it's like, at that point in time, it's like, we're better come out of your mouth.
Yeah, I know. Like, you now, yeah, it's like now the moment is here. You've got to talk in front of this crowd and entertain them.
Yes. Yeah. So the thing I would relate it to would be like whenever you were getting like giving a big presentation in class, you know, like a lot of times, like, you know, you've put like a lot of work into it. You've been like researching, you know, if you were, you know, a child of our mom, then probably the night before we were using like that big paper cutter slicer thing to make like, you know, nice, beautiful matted images for your show board,
yeah,
which is like the big cardboard cutout that you, mm-hmm. know, you stand next to and you point to all your figures and documents and data.
Goodness.
And stuff.
It's so crazy to me that like when I think back, like it was like terrifying to do that stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas like this did not feel quite as terrifying.
Well, the thing I was going to say to compare it would be like, oftentimes I think what would happen in those situations that like are almost maybe even depriving you of like a life lesson is, and I sound that like in a malicious way. I just think like, you're so nervous to go and give the presentation for the first time. But then I think, you know, you go and you do it and you realize you could do it. And there is that sense of relief afterwards. And I think for the most part, that sense of relief you associate with being done with the assignment,
yeah.
and being like, okay, now I don't have to do it again.
Right.
But if you were to examine that sense of relief, I would suggest, based on my experience on tour, that maybe if you did have to do it again, part of the sense of relief that you're feeling is actually the new knowledge that you were capable of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think what I felt on night one was like raw nerves, both to performing and also the unknown. And then I think on night two, what happened to me was it was almost like the unknown got taken away.
Right.
But what was left is what I would call the good nerves.
The good nerves.
Like, I was still nervous for the second night, but I didn't fear what I didn't know would be out there.
Right.
You know, it was like, okay, now I know I've done it once. Now I know like what it felt like. I know what the people will look like. I know what the lights will feel like. I know like that words will still come out of my face,
yeah.
when I need them to.
Right.
And to me, I thought that was actually really cool, because then it was like on the second and third shows that we did, I was like, I am still nervous, but I can use those nerves as fuel.
Right.
This is actually now like, I would actually be like, I'm sure it would be a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I almost feel like I would be more nervous at this point in time if I wasn't nervous.
Oh. Because, like, it's just like, yeah, I see what you mean. Like, there'd be like if you felt like this is just regular, you know, like maybe you wouldn't have like those nerves to like energize you and like fuel you.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, when are nerves like holding you back and when are new nerves pushing you forward? And in this case, I was like, oh, this is really cool. I know what good nerves feel like inside of my being.
Right.
Now when I feel these again in the future, it's like, okay, harness that, run with that. Don't let that hold you back. Because I think sometimes when you're feeling nerves, it's almost like that's like your life ringing like an opportunity bell.
Yeah.
You know, it's like nerves mean that you care for some reason.
Right.
You know, and like when it comes to classes and it comes to like grades, nerves are difficult because you do feel like your teacher holds some of your life in your hands.
Yeah.
And the outcome of this experience might dictate your future prospects. But once you're out in the grown world and you feel nerves, I feel like in many instances, it probably just means that you're pushing a boundary.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like not always, but in many cases, I think pushing boundaries can be good.
I mean, for the most part, yeah, it's normally how you grow and learn new skills and things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get more confidence, hopefully. It's so funny. I'm just thinking about this now because we were talking about another version of it earlier, but like, you know, like, how when you're in school and you have to do like oral presentations or like these big public speaking sort of things, how it feels like it is the most petrifying thing that you have to do.
Yes.
And it can feel like, I don't want to do that at all. And like we were talking earlier, and it's like, but like as an adult, like it just doesn't seem like nearly as big a deal anymore. Like to have to do that.
Do you mean speaking in front of crowds?
Yeah.
Are you saying that you don't think that it comes up as often as school would have told you, or that you're not as nervous when it comes to doing it?
I'm not as nervous as, yeah, when it comes to doing it.
Okay. And I think that's interesting. I think that could speak to a couple of different things.
Yeah.
Like, I think one of them might be that, like, once you get older, the subject matter is probably something that you just are familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure. It's like we were growing up and talking about Harry Potter, which of course we're extremely familiar with.
Yes.
And, you know, there's like the knowledge that people, like, you know, bought tickets and came to be there on purpose to hear you talk about Harry Potter.
Exactly.
And stuff like that. But it's like, I think, like, so it's not that I wasn't like nervous about doing the show or anything.
Sure.
But like, I wasn't nervous about the act of talking in front of people. I was nervous about doing a good job talking in front of people.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Like, will it be entertaining? Will this have been worth people's money to come see or anything? But it's like, like we were talking about this because we recorded another episode of Through the Gryffindor this morning. We were talking about like work cited, like doing research papers and stuff.
Yep.
And it's like, I felt like you always had to have like the bibliography or the work cited sheet. And it always felt like, yeah, any website I went to, I just sort of listed it at the end. I didn't really understand the purpose of doing that.
Right.
Whereas like nowadays it makes like so much more sense. Like, you know, that in school they used to always tell you like, oh yeah, you can't use Wikipedia as your source. But like they needed to finish that sentence with, but just look for the citation and that'll bring you to a real source you could use.
Right.
And
right.
I was like that, it like they're missing that sentence off the back of it, because like I feel like once you realize that Wikipedia is just a big research paper and you can just go to all the works cited, then you can like that shows you how it's supposed to work and like why the information in Wikipedia can be trusted because it says so over here.
Yes.
It's like yeah. I feel like the same thing as with public speaking. Like they're trying to give you these opportunities to get exposure to it, but like they put so much like emphasis on it. They like tell you it's supposed to be this like nerve-wracking thing.
Right.
Kind of thing. And then like it makes it bad, where maybe it wouldn't have been.
Right. Up front.
It's like it has like the reverse effect or something.
No, I totally think you're right. Yeah. Because, and that's sort of like what I was going to say too, is that like as an adult, I think one of two things is ultimately probably happening in most instances, which is either you've just always been comfortable in front of a group of people, which I think sometimes might be the case for you and our younger brother Tyler.
I mean, like, not when I was like in elementary school.
No, you struggled with it more then. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, even just like public speaking in college, and I was like always like nervous to like, you know, when it was my turn to go
give the speech.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, what was interesting was in college when I took public speaking, the thing that I always encountered was like I would choose in those instances. I was really, really, really into like my aquarium life.
Yeah.
At that point in time. So that was like my primary hobby. It was like the main way I was spending my time outside of class was like driving to and from and like doing this work and like doing these things. I was like constantly like on the forums and reading and, you know, like whatever. So like, I remember giving a speech on coral fragmentation and especially like in the world of the hobby.
Yeah.
So like, when you think of like corals, they are like almost like trading cards to other hobbyists, where like there will be a specific strain of like a particular coral is called a chalice. And there will be a particular kind of chalice coral that might be like neon bright blue with a like a bright orange eye and maybe like a green ring. For like extra special color.
Wow.
That would make it like an unusual color combination for a coral versus what you might just find scuba diving. Like chances are you will not find it scuba diving,
right?
Because they're not just growing down there everywhere. Like of all the corals in the ocean, this one is still special. And what people would do, I mean, they would have like heritages, like, you know, people would know like the lineage. They would request like, you know,
bloodlines.
Like, where did you get it from? Whose tank did it come from? And like, was that like a well-known and respected member of the community? So like what you could end up doing though, is each time the coral would grow, it would grow bright new orange green ringed eyes. And then you could actually cut one of those eyes off and like literally put it in like a urine cup, like a sample cup.
Okay.
And then wrap it and ship it, like FedEx ship it overnight to someone else who can then receive it at their front door, put it in their aquarium, and then they could get it to grow and then
Boom. They
could do the same thing.
Right.
And like one eye might sell for like hundreds of dollars.
Right.
You know, like very expensive. And you're talking about like an eraser head.
Yeah.
So like that's like literally just from memory. That is like a segment of a speech I gave my sophomore year in college in the year 2009.
Okay.
You know, so it's like, but like it was subject matter I had hammered down. I knew it inside out. I was living it. So I went up and delivered the speech, and like the whole room was like jaw dropped.
Yeah.
They were like, that was so interesting. Like, I had questions. I mean, I stood up there probably for like 15 to 20 minutes after my speech was over.
Right, just still answering stuff.
Yeah, like people were like engaged. They were interested. They were fascinated. Like, they wanted to know more. Like, can you expand on that? Like, you know, like all sorts of stuff. Like, and I get my grade back and I'm like, I crushed it. I got a C.
A C?
I know. What? And I was like, like, were you in the room?
Were you in the room?
With me? Because like, no one, like, I mean, you know how, like, I mean, I don't, well, maybe you don't, but like at my school, to have the whole room captivated with what you were talking about was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like for the most part, people would finish and it would be like, any hands, any questions? Okay. Thank you, Michael.
All right, cool.
You
know, next.
Like, yeah. The next person would come up. I was like, what happened? And what had happened was I delivered a speech in a way that felt natural and organic to me.
Right.
And it followed all the slides, but my slides and everything wasn't using like 7 words per bullet point and no more than 4 bullet points
right.
per slide.
Yeah.
And like, you know, mm-hmm. it's like there were these
like according to the curriculum, you had done a bad job, even though obviously you did a good job.
Yeah, precisely.
Exactly.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And so that's like, I remember reflecting on that a little bit at the time and being like, you know, honestly, if I was in an actual real world environment and explain this to somebody, then like then regardless of the fact that I followed the template or not, I compelled the room.
Right.
You know, and I was like, huh, that's weird.
It, I mean, stuff like this. Yeah. I remember like, when I was growing up, like just going through like school and stuff, I always felt like I was good at like writing.
Yes.
Like
yeah,
that was the thing.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Like I remember like on our SOLs, I remember like I got like, you know, I remember in like fifth grade, they were like, only 2 people got like perfect writing SOLs, and it was you 2. And I was like, me? No way.
Like, oh, myself. Man,
no
yeah,
big deal.
No big.
That was cool. Like, I remember winning like a DARE essay contest once upon a time.
Yeah.
You know, fun times. And yeah, so it was always like something I felt like I was good at. And I remember my junior year in my like dual government class, we had to do these things where it was like in-class rights, where they would like give you an essay prompt at the beginning of the like class, and you have to write something by the end. And
yep.
I was terrible at them.
Yep.
And like, because one, I just wasn't super like, well, I don't know if I said government, I meant history, but like, I just wasn't ever like knowledgeable enough about the history. But then it didn't even matter, because even if I'd like studied and studied and studied for it, like my writing style did not match the format that the teacher wanted.
Sure.
And it like, I mean, he like kept me after class to like talk to me about it, like before, like the, you know, you're gonna have to like really turn this around. And it was just like, what it was like the worst. I felt so bad.
Yeah.
And then it made me so nervous for every other write ever.
That's
in the
confidence
class.
Shattering.
Yeah, it was just like shattering. And then it was like, you know, sure enough, like the next year I went I had like a different English teacher, and she had all these like wacky writing assignments all the time that were it seemed like my style was like in perfect alignment with what she was looking for on the flip side.
Right.
Whereas like then she like, I remember we got to the front, like, you know, like I remember handing one in one time, and it was about like doodling in class.
Yes.
And I doodled all over the paper to like, you know, enhance it.
Yeah,
and
naturally,
I remember handing
yeah.
it in. She was like, you can't hand in a paper like this. And I was like, no, it makes sense. Just, it's fine. And then like I came in the next day, and she's like, can I read this to the class? And I was like, no, please not. Absolutely not. That's no way. No chance. But it was like a complete turnaround, you know.
That's wild.
Yeah,
that's wild.
So, and now I write every day. So take that, dude.
Mr. L.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. L. Big L. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez. Gosh. That was one of those teachers too. Like, he was a very good speaker, though. Everyone thought he was cool. So the fact that he thought my writing was so bad hurt that much more.
I know. Yeah. This is like the thing though that tells me that like we were not cut out for like the world of like academia.
Yeah.
Like, because I think we do like this is like kind of like one of those funny things like where in the early days, like when, you know, if I met somebody and they asked me like what I did, I would describe more the aspects of like YouTube at large, or like some people, like oftentimes, like I remember meeting like my father-in-law, and he was like, but how does that generate income, you know? And it was sort of like, well, let me explain that. But like now, for the most part, when people ask, like, what do? I'm like, probably really at its core, we're probably writers. Like,
yeah.
That's probably, like, it's what we spend the most time doing.
Yeah.
But we write in such a ridiculously informal way.
Very informal way, filled with, like, it's, you know, people will talk about, like, some writers will be like, you want to, like, have as little voice as possible, or sometimes you want a lot more voice. Ours is like 95% voice, you know.
Yes,
we
yes,
are voice yeah. heavy writers,
voice,
you know? Heavy,
yeah,
yeah. So, grammatical nightmares, but we hit all the points we need in the order that we need, that is engaging, and that circles back on itself to be like, oh, that part earlier came back, cool.
Yes,
yeah.
There was a reason for that.
There was a reason.
I know.
I wasn't just bringing it up. I'm not just making it longer. It matters.
It matters.
Yeah.
This is yeah, one of those that, like, I'd be so desperately curious about to see if, like, we ever attempted to write a book, because I feel like any real world editor would be like, no.
No. They would be like, okay, we're going to have to, like, do a lot of... I feel like it would just be a big, like, grammar problem for them.
It would be a huge, you know, grammar problem.
Huge grammar problem. But the story, I have no doubt, would be like, now that was very clever. No doubt.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think they would think, you've got good ideas, you're terrible at, like, writing in terms of, like, you know, being correct and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, the number of, like, squiggly lines. Like, this is, like, one of those things that, like, I'd be embarrassed if we ever brought, like, someone else in who is actively contributing to scripts in particular, because it'd be, like, the little, like, red or, like, you know, grammar squiggle lines underneath. It's, like, there are spelling errors, there are grammatical errors. Like, it's a hot mess.
You know what? I just have Grammarly on my computer now. It's awesome.
Do you really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's great.
It's just like, oh, yeah, I'll just correct that. Boom. Yeah, cool. Awesome.
You could say this better.
Yeah, I could. Well, a lot of times, yeah, if they're like, a lot of what I like about it is that it will just, like, fix all of, like, the tiny thing. It's not necessarily, like, rephrasing something altogether.
Okay.
Sometimes it'll be like, you've been a little wordy here. You could sound more confident here if you want to. Yeah. And sometimes I take their advice, and a lot of times I just don't.
Well,
nope. I see what you mean, because I made up a word right there and that doesn't make sense. Or I probably didn't need to put, like, really super duper heavy, awesome, like, five words in there. But it's like, but when I say it out loud, that'll sound more conversational. So I'm going to leave it in there. Grammarly, just chill. You got it.
I know. Yeah. I it's definitely occurred to me that I think I'm wordy.
Mm.
Yeah. I use a lot too many words. forever and ever, I was like, I would meet people and I'd be like, oh my gosh, this person's such a talker. Like, I'm going to be here forever. And I have definitely, as I've gotten older, I'm like, it's me.
It's me. You're the talker.
I'm the problem.
They
may also be a talker.
Yeah.
But I think oftentimes there, it's like, I've tried to assess situations where people are like, oh, how things are going. I'm like, ah, not so good. Or, you know, like, whatever. But, like, they won't, like, elaborate on it. And, like, well, goodness me. I mean, there's a thing that's happening in my life. Like, you know, it's like, I'll just, like, go down the whole, whole thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's like, how was your trip? Oh, it was eventful. Yeah. It's like, how much time you got?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I do know what you mean. Yeah, so I don't think you're as wordy. I think maybe you've, like, caught on to yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm doing my best.
Doing your best.
I was going to try.
You're going to try to do it?
Try to be really wordy in my response.
Yeah. But there's, like, I think there's a difference between, like, talking a lot and engaging more versus just, like being extra wordy and adding in a bunch of words that, like, are not necessary.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Okay, so story time. Since the day that I met my wife, Alice, she has been all about secondhand clothing. So 2 years ago, we decided to take that idea and run with it and open a business called Nude. It's like the past tense of new, because it's not really old, but, you know, nude. Old is the new nude. You get it. Anyway, we'd both been in business, but she was hung up on how to start selling online. But fortunately, I had experience with Shopify, and to tell you that we got started in no time is a straight up understatement. We were busy being brand new parents to a 6-month-old, we both have other jobs, and within 2 weeks of idea conception, we had the website up and running. So if you're on the fence, whether it's in the, like, launch your online shop stage, to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million order stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Plus, even if you do have questions, Shopify's award-winning help is there to help support your success every step of the way. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Arena Club. Okay, so y'all may be aware that we are pretty big fans of collecting Pokemon cards, meaning we have opened tons and tons of cards, but never have we opened cards the way you can with Arena Club. So here's how it works. Arena Club offers what's called slab packs, and the whole experience, top to bottom, is absolutely thrilling because what they do is put together this huge selection of cards, then they list all of the available cards you could potentially open so you know the pull rates, and then you digitally open your packs to reveal your latest pulls. And like, here is us genuinely opening up our last pack.
What is it? Oh my god, dude, it is literally the one we tried to open for earlier this week.
That is so crazy.
What makes it fun is even though you're opening them digitally, whatever you open is your physical card. So after you crack the pack, they'll display them in your own personal showroom where people can like make trade or purchase offers, or you can have that physical card shipped right to your home, which is what we've been doing because we love like displaying our Pokemon cards in our collection and stuff. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or just displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. So right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that's a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's $40 right there. But anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Okay, raise your hand if you were on your parents' phone plan and then grew up and eventually got that call letting you know it was time to leave the nest and secure your own, only to realize that wireless plans be expensive. Well, same, or if this has never happened to you, then spoilers, but Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online, meaning they don't have retail stores or salespeople. Instead, they deliver premium phone plans directly to you. And let me tell you what, guys, we just finished our first ever tour and hit about 25% of the United States, and the service was perfect throughout the entire journey. And I'm saving like $240 per year compared to my old plan. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/poppop. That's mintmobile.com/poppop. Cut your wireless plan to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/poppop.
Oh man, my thing keeps dying here. Yeah, but anyway, we haven't talked about Tor almost at all.
We haven't even talked about Tor almost at all. Yeah. We somehow talked about writing instead.
We sometimes talked about writing and complaining about our high school teachers.
Yes, yes. No, but lame. Yeah, Tor was, I mean, really, really, truly incredible. Like, I thought it was such an overall super fun experience. And like, we got to meet, like, this is one of the biggest things that happens when you go out into the world and you get to like meet the people like who listen. You know, like the community that is like around us.
Yeah.
Because the main thing that if I had to say happens as like someone who makes content on the internet is you do feel like not like a known sense of separation from what it's like on the other side, but you just don't know how it's impacting people. Like, you don't know the way in which they're listening to it or like what's you know what it means to them.
Right.
And then I think when you get to go and spend time around those people and like see the way that it is clearly impacting them, it's like, this is wild.
I know.
This is like amazingly cool.
Well, and it's like, I when we make stuff, it's like so often about like, you know, we're trying to like be really positive and we want people to feel like comfortable enjoying the things they enjoy.
Right.
And you know, like be like this like uplifting force in their lives. And it's crazy when you meet people and like they will just like spit that directly back at you. Like, you know, you got me through like this hard time. You guys have always been so positive. I know I can always count on you to like lift my spirits. And it's just like, oh my God, it's like exactly what I'm trying to do is working on you.
Yes.
And like, thank goodness, like it, you know.
Yeah, no, right. No, absolutely. Right. And yeah, you I think you hit the nail on the head, because you do. I mean, it feels surreal. You feel like speechless in those moments. So I'm always like,
right. It's like, I'm glad what I'm doing is resonating out there in some way, the way I want it to be resonating, because right. You're right. Like it can be very easy to feel like removed from the audience when you just sort of like put it out and you like, you see that people watched it, cause you can look at the numbers and you can see the numbers, but you don't see like the people. So it is so awesome to be out there and just like meet the people in real life. It is like hands down, like the best part. Like when you go out and you're like, you know, we did like the meet and greets, which are always super fun. You get to like talk to all the people and stuff.
Yes.
But then like even just doing the show and just seeing people in the audience, like just, you know, they're in on the jokes. Like they've been listening the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, you're just in a room talking into a microphone, but like all these people are out there. Like, it's like you've all got this shared experience that you've all had individually, but now you're together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was even really like quite interesting as well, because when I think I can't even claim that I would have thought that this was something that like the show that we do Through the Gryffindor was offering to viewers. But like a lot of people refer to it as like they're like comfort listen, you know, like it was like very like a very like cozy sort of thing, which I can get, because we're not loud necessarily. We're not exuberant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, at any given point in time when we're like recording that show. But the thing that blew my mind the most was I don't ever think of Through the Gryffindor as specifically or even intentionally funny, which was the, like, I think one of the coolest things about it was like, you know, you'd be like going through, you're flipping your pages, you know, you're like making all your points and stuff like that. And there's like a laugh, like murmurs through the room. And you're like,
was that funny?
Well, me.
I know there is something truly magical too about like a live audience where you can like feed off the energy of the room.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yep.
And yes.
No, I mean, I was just going to complete your thought. Yeah. Like I agree, because there were moments where I would be like reading what I would have described as like otherwise like an obscure line of text from the book. And like, I would be like going to set up a point and I could literally see somebody like three rows back, like nodding their head and like pointing at me. And I'm like,
right.
You know exactly the point like, I'm about to make right
you get
now.
It. Mm-hmm. That I was thing. Like, I thought of that thing.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, well, this is so unbelievable.
I know.
Yeah. How neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This person gets it.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. That was very fun. That was very fun.
It was really cool. It was really cool. Yeah. So that was like, you know, from our side, that's like what it was. That was the experience.
It was awesome. Was there anything about like, how did like life on the road, did it like meet your expectations? Was it like different than you thought it would be?
It was, I had no idea what to expect out of like, cause our whole team was with us. We're all piled into our van, which we named Harrison.
We did. Yeah. Harrison,
which I think Isabel named Harrison. Credit where credit is due.
Sure.
Yes. Cause it was a Ford. So Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford. Right. Yeah.
And Harrison, I felt like became one of us.
I mean, yeah, he was like a real character of the trip.
We took a photo with our rental van at the end of the trip because we needed to commemorate the occasion.
Yeah.
But otherwise it was so like, I couldn't believe, you know, that the way that my energy worked while I was out there, because everything we were doing was like simultaneously filling my cup while also draining it at the exact same time, to the point where I was getting like I was exhausted at the end of every day, and then I couldn't sleep, and then I wasn't sleeping throughout the night, and then I would get up the next morning and be so fired up that I was energized throughout the entire day, and then I would get to the end of the day and I'd be so exhausted because I didn't sleep the night before and then just did another show, and now I'm back in the hotel room and now I can't sleep again.
Right.
You know, so like for the first three nights I was getting like 3 hours of sleep while we were traveling like hours every day and doing these, you know, in-person things, and you're traveling the cities and navigating and it's, I mean, drinking from a fire hose to say the least.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're just taking in information. You're trying to learn the ins and outs of like how each of these venues works, like what the expectations are. Like, it's not the audience interaction or the show or anything like that. It's like the details. It's the logistics.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot of them involved. Like Harrison, our van,
he's a tall boy.
A tall boy. Yeah. So too tall to go into every single parking garage.
Oh my gosh. You didn't think about that either. Cause you're just like, you know, like typically if you go to a hotel in a city, like they just have like an associated garage.
Yes.
Like they've solved parking. They know it's going to be a problem. There's right. a lot of people in their building and there's not a lot of parking spaces. So they will typically be like, yes, right over there. Or there's a garage right next to it, or give it to the valet or whatever.
Right.
Which all of the places we stayed at had those solutions. But what they did not have was 10-foot roofs.
Yes.
And so we could not use those solutions.
Right.
So it was like, what do every night? I guess we're just going to drive around these blocks in Brooklyn until we find a parking spot.
Right.
Where hopefully we're not breaking the law. I don't think we are, but this sign is... Is it?
It says no, but there's also only one of them and it's bent really badly and everyone else is parked on the street. So
right.
It's like, surely it's not just this one spot that's unacceptable.
Right.
And, you know, but like the inevitability of like having your vehicle towed.
Oh, I know. With all of your stuff.
Yes. It's like, no, don't let that happen.
Right. Right. You're like, that cannot happen. We can't be like getting Harrison out of an impound lot for half a day, you know.
Yeah, we do not have that kind of time.
We don't have the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, so not going to be doing that.
Right.
But even the venues would have these problems. They'd be like, oh yeah, you can park over here. Oh, except that you can't because your van's too big.
Which,
my bad.
Like, this is the thing that was blowing my mind is you're going to these venues and I'm like, we are a podcast with five people. These venues host big shows, you know, like I mean, maybe not huge, but like bands that certainly have like full kits,
drum
and
sets,
and amps,
and, right?
And, you know, like all the things that band people have,
right? You show up at some of them, and they're just like, yeah, we're like, you know, can we get a cart? They're like, we've heard of carts; those sound like a thing that exists. Sure, right.
Yeah, it's like we need to move like four like Tupperware tubs. You know, it's like ooh, it's like, what do you mean? This has to be standard,
right? Like, have more of a format, guys.
Right? Yeah. Like, but then like they all seemed the same in their like in their kind of like maybe we have a cart.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you know, so maybe it's less common than we.
I don't know. But yeah. Maybe we were just who knows? Maybe we should just carry everything.
We shall only continue.
We shall only continue to learn. Yeah.
Yes. Gain more experience as we go.
Yep.
But so that's like the work aspect of the trip. But then we also just had kind of an incredible trip in addition to that. We did many a things.
We got some stuff done. Yes. So our first stop was in Boston.
Yep.
Super fun. Me and Ben flew up. The crew picked us up. That was great. And we went straight from the airport to Fenway Park.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
It was flying into
Boston and then you're just like, you're there.
You're there. You're right there. Boom. And it's like right in the middle of the city and stuff. So that was really cool. And like I think I've been to two other professional baseball games ever for like the Nationals and the Braves.
Okay.
Like growing up, our dad was like more of like a Red Sox fan and like, you know, Fenway Park is maybe like the most famous baseball park.
Yeah.
You know, like Wrigley Field probably up there too, but like, it's like a historic place.
It is. Yeah. And it's like, I think that was something that kind of like blew my mind as well. Cause like, yeah, so you're wearing like, you know, your Celtic stuff. And like, we went to, oh gosh,
TD Gardens.
Nope. No. What was the stadium we went to watch the Celtics play in DC?
Oh, I don't remember the name of the stadium.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter because it's not a historic place.
Exactly. But like when you walk in, it's like huge and bright and there's lights everywhere and it's like modern and just like, I mean, it's sensory overload. But then when you walk into like Fenway, it's like you are walking into actual history that is still being used.
Still there.
Right now.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, it's like, you know, I'm not like a huge, I don't even think I've watched a baseball game on TV, maybe ever. And you know, like, but like still, I'm just like, this is awesome.
I know. It's like you walk around and it's like, you can tell much of the inside has been like renovated and like updated and it looks nice, but like you can't update the infrastructure past certain parts, you know?
Right.
Like you're still walking under the stadium and sort of tilting your head sideways because the ceilings aren't very high.
Right.
And like, you know, it's still just like made out of it's just the original place, you know, it's just there. there.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you walk onto the field and it's just like, oh man, it like, it really was cool. It felt like you were just like, yeah, you're like part of history still.
Yeah.
Because it's just such an old place. And then, you know, every professional sporting event I've ever been to, I don't like, you know, we go to like, we have like local minor league baseball here in Roanoke, and it's like, it's fun, and we'll go to like the hockey games over at the concert venue I used to work at.
Nice.
For your bingo card there, you know, the Rail Yard Dogs, and it's like, it's fun, it's great, but it is like a whole different level when it is like a pro sports team.
Yeah.
And like, there are peoples whose whole job it is just to make it fun for the people there.
Yep.
And like, they do such a good job. They always do such, I'm always blown away by like how much fun it is.
No, I know. Yeah. It was so great. So we had peanuts and beer. Yep. And a hot dog.
Yep.
And it was glorious.
Yep. Glorious. Just sitting out there. We had sun seats. We did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We did.
We had some sun seats. So our cousin, Rachel, lives in Boston. And we met up with her afterwards, and she brought us to like her favorite little brewery, which was also really good. And, you know, we're telling her, like, yeah, we're sort of like, I think we were like in the sun. We were in the sun for a lot. She's like, oh, yeah, it's sun seats. And it was like, yes. Oh, it's a thing. It's a known thing.
It's, yeah, like, of course, because the sun is always where it is.
And yes. Right.
Yeah. That tracks. Yeah, yeah.
That's probably why they were cheaper tickets. I got it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Sitting in the sun.
We're sitting there, though. And I mean, it really was like, I was like, we will cook. Like,
yeah,
it is so warm,
yeah,
right now. And I'm like, all I can think about is we're going to show up tomorrow night for our first day of tour, and we're all just going to be like lobsters.
I know. Like, fortunately, Kat had brought some SPF 70.
Thank goodness for Kat.
I
know.
And I think we needed every SPF that thing had to offer.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree completely. Yeah.
It was a warm day, but you know what? No sunburns.
None. None whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
We made it out.
The Red Sox won. We got to see two live home runs.
We did.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
It was pretty glorious.
Yeah,
it was
pretty good.
Glorious. So then that fast forwards us to New York City.
New York City.
Which was honestly also just like, and it's like, there's something about going to places like this where it's like, you don't even need direction. You can just sort of go and explore and be like, wow, there is so much going on here.
Yes,
all the time,
especially if you're like the Times Square area, which is like, it is super touristy, but like, we're tourists, so that's all we need.
I know. Yes, you're exactly right.
Right.
Oh my God. We have to tell the story of our tremendous conversation that we had with a minimally clothed senior citizen.
Yes. I had that in here for after the final pop. We can tell it now if you want.
Why don't we?
Okay. All right. So when I visited New York City in eighth grade.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
There was, I don't know if he's still there. We didn't see him. There was this guy known as like the naked cowboy of Times Square.
Yeah.
And not really naked. He was just like this guy in cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. And he had his guitar, and he had like on like, I think I want to say like whitey tighties, you know?
But yeah.
He was like just out there in his underwear.
Like a Speedo type situation.
Speedo type. Yeah. Like a guy, you know, but he was like, you know, good looking guy singing on the middle of Times Square. It's like a real, became like a fixture of the area.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what, Ben, when we oh boy, we're sitting there. We're having a beer, just sort of killing time. And I'm just like looking down at my phone, checking on something. And I just hear someone. I can see. I perceive someone walk up to us, and they say, "Who's taking a picture with me?" And I look up, and I could not have. I could never ever have dreamt up what was going to be asking me this question.
Yeah.
And it is this elderly woman. I guess the naked cowgirl of Times Square.
She's taking up the persona, maybe.
She's taking up the call, man.
Yeah.
She got the boots,
got the guitar.
And not much else. Not much else, Ben. I mean, some pasties, I guess. And
oh,
some,
man. It just feels uncomfortable.
It feels uncomfortable even saying it. And like some underwear, you know.
Some.
And a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And just, you know, one birthday cake's worth of makeup, I would say. Yeah. I mean,
It was quite the experience.
It was like, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah, and you know, it's normally in situations like this, like, I mean, if you've walked around Times Square or Vegas or anything, like there's invariably the people who are kind of like street performers who are taking the photos with like people who are traveling through town. So like you can sort of take pictures like with Spider-Man in New York City, and it's like, you know, like someone who is in like a Spider-Man costume, and the kind of thought there is like they'll give you like this experience, this photo op, but you should tip them. Like,
right.
That is like, you know, like it would be like poor manners to go and snap a photo and be like, all right, thanks.
See ya. Yeah.
You know, like I don't think that would go over very well.
Right.
So it, for the most part, when this woman walks up to us, I largely just sort of think that like it will become very clear very quickly that we don't intend to partake in that experience.
Right.
And that, like, oddly, she just ends up sort of being like, so what do you guys do? And, you know, we're kind of like, oh boy.
Yeah, right.
Well,
then like all I'm thinking is like, I want this conversation over as soon as possible.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
It did not happen.
It sure
Ben.
Didn't. No. Jay, you were just, you know what? You were just too engaging.
Yeah.
just like, you think she's the talker, but maybe.
I don't think it was. I think so. At some point it occurred to me that it was making other people in the group even more uncomfortable than me. And I was pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I was starting to get amusement from the fact that other people were uncomfortable.
Okay. So like me, Ethan, and Isabel.
Yeah, okay. I could tell you guys were just like, and so I was starting to get enjoyment out of your discomfort. So I was just like, yeah, what's up? Let's keep talking.
It's like, yeah. So it ends up being rather funny because we explained to her like what we're there doing and everything. And she's like, oh, like, you know, uploading to YouTube. That seems like a great idea. Can you guys explain to me how to do that? And we're like,
yeah, I know. I'm like, you want us to like get our phones out and like show you how to upload a video? Cause there's like one button.
It was hard. Well, I think what's difficult in that situation is that the actual answer is so simple that you fear coming across as condescending in the name of saying,
right.
Click.
You want to be polite.
Yeah, exactly.
To naked cowgirl.
Yeah, precisely. Right. You don't want to be rude.
Don't want to be rude. Yeah.
And so it's like, I think we're all kind of like, we're pinned in an interesting way because I genuinely think that all of us were doing our best to be polite, to answer the questions, to like, you know, do all the things. But it was sort of like, well, how do you upload to YouTube? They're like, well, does somebody have to approve you? It's like, no.
I know.
You can just do it.
Yeah, I know. She was like, yeah, she asked us if like we'd ever been to a comedy club, and we're like, we've been there like a couple nights ago. We're like, oh, was it funny? And I was like, well, I hope so. We were the ones on stage. And then I think she was like, oh, other performers, my people.
Yes.
We're like, I don't think we are.
Needless to say, we're starting a brand new podcast, My Brother and the Naked Cowgirl.
Oh boy, we're not starting that.
No, we're not. But, anyway, but it was a really kind of like, honestly, it's like, it really was uncomfortable at first. And you know, you're kind of there. And like, I think it wasn't even just like, it wasn't talking to her that was making me uncomfortable. Like, I think that would have been fine. It was the fact that there was like, a mom with her two like young children.
That's true. We're sitting like 1 foot away from us.
Yes. Yeah. Like 7 inches, you know? And I'm like, I don't like, I feel like the mom kept looking at us like, guys, stop
like get,
talking.
Yeah, like, guys, break off this conversation.
I know. We're like, we tried to say upload, but I don't know if it was clear.
Yeah.
So it continued on. But by the end of it, she was like, you know what, guys, I'll give you a picture for free. So
yeah.
So we took one.
So we took a picture.
Yeah.
So we got a picture, I guess.
So we got one.
Wow.
It was times.
It was time. Times were had. They sure were.
Yeah. So that was a fun and kind of hilarious, you know, New York City experience. That felt like touristing the way you're supposed to tourist.
A little bit, yeah. From there, we were going to see the show Hadestown.
Yeah, starring Jordan Fisher.
Jordan Fisher.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't tell you. I still, like, people have told me all the other stuff he's done, and I'm like, yeah, I guess he's famous for other stuff, too.
Yes. The main thing that I know Jordan Fisher from prior to going to see the performance, and I know this is, like, one of those things where somebody's going to, like, completely scoff, but it was, I believe he is the male vocals for the song Happily Ever After during Magic Kingdom and Disney World's firework show.
I think he's also one of the members of 4Town from Turning Red.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So he's done like some Disney works. Anyway, yeah. Hadestown was amazing.
But Hadestown was good. That's what I know him from, and he was good.
Yes. Yeah. So we won't go into that. But before we got there, we found yet another performance.
Yes, we did. Yeah. We're like walking towards the theater, and there's these, I guess, like breakdancer looking guys setting up some cones on the sidewalk, getting ready to put down show. And I mean, like, they were doing, like, you know, pretty impressive looking things for sure.
For sure.
And I was like, oh, maybe we'll stop and watch this for a second here. You know, we got a few extra minutes to kill. Maybe watch some cool moves or something.
Right.
Maybe try and leave before we, you know, are too hard committed into all giving up like a bunch of big generous tips or something.
Sure.
Which is almost certainly what they're angling for here. But it was, they bust out, they start doing their moves and stuff. And then they go through like their first round of stuff, and they call this kid out there, and they're like, all right, we're going to jump over this kid. And it was like, they just like big flip over him. I was like, well, that was cool. And then the guy on the mic just locks eyes with Ben and is like, yo, all right, I need someone else. You get out here.
Yeah.
He, sexy white guy. Come on.
Yeah.
That's so, what he called you.
That is what he called
me. Yeah.
Yeah.
At that point, you couldn't be. It's like a good trap. You're like, not me.
Yeah. It's like, what are you, not sexy?
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
Oh, man.
I literally don't know. I am so confused right now. Yeah.
Ben got pulled on stage.
I got pulled. Yeah. I was that guy.
You were always that guy. They just see you coming a mile away.
I was thinking about this while I was up there, but like when we went to Disney World as kids, I think we were in front of like the Hall of Presidents, and I got that guy as a little kid.
Ben, like I tell you, like I remember at the Berglund Center.
Yeah.
Every now and then we would have Cirque du Soleil come in, and it would be like the biggest event of the year.
Yep.
Because Cirque du Soleil, awesome. Absolutely. If you haven't seen it and it's coming to your town, go see it. It's so cool. But the warm up act typically is like where like their version of clowns will come out and do some stuff, or maybe it's just in the middle of the show.
Okay,
but they will be like walking through the crowd, and they will like, you know, they'll pick people and they'll bring them on stage and they'll make them do embarrassing things and stuff, and like you're always watching and you're like, man, they like, good thing that guy was so like agreeable to do the thing,
right?
You know, like, man, like what if he'd just been too embarrassed to do it? And like I remember asking, because I used to have to drive these people around to like the different news stations so they could like do the press tour and stuff and like get people to come to the show and things,
right?
And that was one of my questions, like, do you ever like pick people who are like too embarrassed to do it, and they're like, no, like the clowns who are like walking through the audience, like picking, like there's like a genuine skill to it.
Right.
Like they can immediately, they can tell who is going to be good.
Right.
Like just by doing a quick survey. And like I don't know what they're looking for, but they are identifying something about certain people that are like, you are going to be good, and they're going to get you on stage. And that's why it's always good.
I know.
Because like they are perceiving something. I don't know what training they're going through, but they know. So that you clearly are marked in something about the way you stand or your body weight or your smile or something is like stands out to these professional pickers.
And it's the strangest thing too, because like, you know, we are out there. Like the reason that we're in New York City in the first place is because we are going in and doing like a show. But like, it's something that like I am personally having to like overcome rather considerable nerve. So it's like it's such a funny sweet spot if they are exhibiting this skill on me in particular, because it's like, you're not totally wrong, but you're also not totally right either. Yeah. Like I am like not. I'm not terrified to go in front of people, and I will do it, but it's like, but I don't necessarily like, it's not like my preference either.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, I'm an odd pick. So, and then it was even funny because, you know, like they're going through and I basically had to do nothing.
Yeah. Just stand there.
Cause they're definitely teeing it up to make it appear as though, yes, look, we just jumped that little kid. Now we're going to jump these five adults.
Right.
And, you know, they're like, so, you know, they picked me and they picked a bunch of other people to like go out there and like, you know, stand in the row. And then they do the whole thing where they're like, all right, guys, before we do this, you know, we're street performers. We need, you know, we're going to pass around a hat type situation.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the whole bit or whatever. And, you know, the last thing they do is they call each of us forward, which I can only describe as like the most polite and public mugging that could possibly happen.
I know. Right. Right.
But like they like walk each of us forward and they ask us like, you know, where are you from? And this is like one of those moments where I was like, see, I was a bad pick. Cause I was like, Virginia. Yeah. And he's like, okay, Virginia, like, what you got for us? And so like, he's basically asking us to like pull our wallets out of our pockets and like show the amount of like cash that we have. And so
show us how much you love that show.
I mean, literally for me, I barely ever and rarely carry cash at all. So I had like, you know, a $10 bill.
So that's not love. That's like,
right,
in my wallet. And I was like, here you go. You know, yeah, like,
you know what? This is worth the story. I will tell on my podcast later.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll take the experience for $10. But like, you know, then the next guy down was like a dad, and you know, like he opens up, he's got like one of those wallets that like could be like a binder,
right?
You know, and it's like he's got like just
he's got every receipt since 2019 in there.
He's got like the little folio of like plastic photos from like his kids' school pictures and stuff like that. But yeah, so he's got like, you know, a sack of, I don't know, like ones, fives, tens, twenties, and hundreds in there, and the guy's like, how about the hundreds? You know, and I'm like, thank goodness I didn't have any hundreds on me.
I
would have been too embarrassed. I'm like, I guess. Why not?
Oh, goodness.
I know. Yeah. So fortunately, I bodged that delay.
I guess so.
As they say.
Yeah.
But so then they basically go through and they like move a couple of people around or whatever. Then three of us are left in a line and they like run and they ask us to like bend forward. So we're like leaned over, kind of like touching our toes.
Yeah.
And then they come and like do the flip over us. And it was like, it was actually probably a less impressive flip the second time than it was jumping the small child.
You were like lower to the ground than that kid was tall.
Exactly.
After you bent over. Yeah.
Right. So anyway.
Yeah.
I was involved.
Not exactly what was promised, I dare say.
Yeah.
It's not unimpressive. That's the thing. I kept thinking about that. I was like, the jump they did at the end was still really cool. They just like over promised and then under delivered.
I agree. But I think at that point in time, it's like they're like building your expectations, hoping it'll go higher, but they have no like Yelp reviews.
Oh yeah. Right. You know, like they're just collecting people on the street. Yeah.
Right,
people give them bad reviews. Who cares?
Right. Yeah. There's nowhere to leave that, you know, plus you have like a fresh cycle of people probably every single day.
Yeah.
So you can just go do the same show and it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
No big
deal. Well, now you know. Look, they're not going to actually jump over those people. They're going to like cheat it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you know.
It was still fun to be involved.
It was. It was cool.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, and we got some cool video of the guy jumping over you and stuff. So
Indeed.
So there's that.
Good times.
Yeah. Good times.
One day I wish to, well, actually, you know, I think at some point in my life I could do like a standing backflip.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so I was about to say like one day I hope to be able to do such a flip, and I'm like, actually, that's probably expiring. I bet I'm not moving closer every day to being able to do a front flip over another human being.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
You know, like as like when I was like younger, like there was absolutely a part of me believed that like at some point I would like know how to break dance. I was like, I don't know when, but like it will happen.
It will happen.
You know, like I'll get to it eventually.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know what? I didn't get to it.
there might not still be time.
I don't think I can still do it. Yeah.
Right. Should we try to like take a class?
Oh man.
Is this like I'm asking a rhetorical question, like, is it a learnable skill? But it's like, it is.
Of course, it's a learnable skill.
How else do people learn it? But like, is it the kind of learnable skill like a Rubik's Cube where it's like, if you really, really want to and you want to like spend some time like tinkering with it, like you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I suspect there are some breakdance moves we could still manage.
Okay.
Probably not like, you know, spinning around on our beanies or anything on just your, you know, like on
our
your
piece
head.
Of cardboard.
Yeah. On your piece of cardboard. I don't think I'm doing the thing where you're just on your hands and doing like the whole legs in the air around the world nonsense.
You don't think so?
I mean, who knows? Maybe I could, Ben.
Jay, 2 months ago, you didn't even have a mustache.
Well, you make some excellent points.
I know. Yeah. I know. That's what I'm here for.
Well,
I'm here for you.
All right. That's it. I'm taking a class.
I'll learn a breakdance a day for every new follower I get in June.
A breakdance a day. I could just tell you that I would come in here and be like, yeah, I dislocated my shoulder. It happened. Yep. No doubt.
I have become injured.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll see about that. I will say though, I have been recently motivated to further workout goals.
Oh,
yes,
to further. Okay,
yes, a little bit. So it's going to sound like the dumbest thing ever
as I tell the story. I'm already excited.
You're excited.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you.
Does it involve me?
It does not involve you. I mean, you can work out with me if you want.
Will
which
I
you
be
already
invited?
Do. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'm feeling good about it.
So. We go, we do the tour, we come back, and the very next day, Beth had, for my birthday early this year, gotten me and her tickets to go to the tour of Mythicality.
Yes. Yes. Which I thought was kind of amazing because I was like, Jay, go take notes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like the difference between what Good Mythical Morning is doing and what we were doing.
A lot different.
A lot different. Yeah.
They've got like a whole production crew. They've got like a giant screen they're bringing with them. It's like a whole thing. Yeah, it's more than two dudes sitting in chairs talking about Harry Potter. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Well,
I had some takeaways. No doubt.
Okay, good.
But and if you don't know, me and Beth just love Good Mythical Morning. We watch it every single day.
Yeah.
Mythical Beasts, you know, doing our mythical best, all that nonsense.
Nice.
Let's talk about that. And so we're going through and we're watching the show. And it's in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is like the hometown show for Rhett and Link because they're from North Carolina. So they have the hometown crowd. So like, you know, their family's there. It's like really fun show, fun time. And it was cool seeing them in person after like watching them every single day. It was so surreal being like just on the exact opposite end of what we'd been doing for the last week ourselves.
Yes, that was what was so mind blowing to me. I'm like, it's so crazy that like you're now attending the thing that we were doing.
Exactly.
Scale.
But so in any case, the workout portion of it is that, are you familiar with Mythical Chef Josh?
I'm not.
Well, Mythical Chef Josh is the guy who makes all the food, crazy food they eat.
Without context, I could have sorted
that. You could have figured that out. Yeah. Well, now, like Mythical Kitchen is the second channel they do. They just released the Mythical Cookbook. I'm just doing like a free brand deal for you guys. You're welcome. I'm sure everyone an hour into Popcorn Culture episode 236 or whatever we're on.
Yeah, 236.
Yeah. Wow. Good pull there for myself. But so they have the different Mythical crew members there, and they're like, each one is like part of the, you know, the next shtick or whatever.
Okay.
And they eat so much food that one of them is that they're gonna like try, like they were comparing North Carolina barbecue places, like a new place versus an old place.
Okay.
And so to help them do the judging, they have Josh come out. But the way in which he comes out, if you don't know what Josh looks like, he looks like freaking amazing.
He
looks like freaking amazing, man. The guy is jacked. I mean, he's huge.
Okay.
Like, works out a ton.
Okay.
A lot. And the way they have him come out on stage is that he comes out and like literally rips his shirt off and throws it into the crowd.
Nice.
And he's like wearing the jorts and he does like a whole like bodybuilder flexing sort of thing. I was just like, goodness me. This guy is like working out. I gotta work harder.
Okay.
That's it. It was very much like, it was like Chris Pratt meeting Thor in Infinity War. I was like, I'm getting to Bowflex.
I'm going
to
commit.
I'm committing. Let's go. Okay. So like, I was literally thinking about it at the gym this morning. I was like, you know what? Hold for one extra second, a little bit longer, you know? Try, you know what? Can I go 5 pounds higher? I'm going to go for it. I'm doing it.
Okay.
Hilariously, I felt bad for him. Like Josh had been weightlifting that morning as well. And he had like pulled something in his back. So he like could not do everything he was like trying to do. And like, even at the end of the show where they all came out to do a bow, he did not bow because he could not bend over.
Oh, no.
So bad, but that sucks. But that anyway, shout out to Mythical Chef Josh for just doing your thing, man.
Yeah. Way to
Very
go.
Entertaining way to go. All the way around.
So, So is this your new regime though? Is like the regime is somehow become somewhere between where you currently are and Mythical Chef Josh?
Yeah. Yeah, just anywhere in between.
Anywhere in between.
Anyway, you know, we worked out this morning, so I'm already somewhere in between.
You are
a little bit better. That was the other thing. The food of tour life, not super healthy.
Yeah.
Not going to lie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. When you're eating like on the road, like a whole lot.
Yeah.
I was feeling the same thing.
Yeah. I was like, it's so fun. But I was also super glad to come home and like reset a little bit.
There was a part of me pre-tour that was kind of like, maybe I'll like get up in the morning and like go for a run so I can like start each day having like done something. And then I was like, ooh, there is no time whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I would be even more exhausteder than I already was.
Yeah. So maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Work that into the schedule.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You gotta keep on your workout routine.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Workout, health.
Yep.
Those things.
Order your salads.
Right. Yeah.
As you will.
Just the salad.
Hit the protein.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But either way, tour of Mythicality, super fun time. And it was super fun that like came back and had something to like then go do with Beth as well.
Yeah.
Dude, just like big shout out to Beth and Alice for man in the home front while we were out on the road.
I know. Yeah. That is like the definite big ask about like what we're doing here is that it's really cool. It is very fun. It is super exciting. And it's so great to like get to be out there and like meeting everybody. But yeah, that it does come at a non-zero cost to them who then have to like hold down the respective forts.
Yeah. So no doubt.
We could not do it without their support.
Not at all.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, but guys, thank you so much as ever for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. As per always, if you have any feedback for us, you can send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Almost forgot our email.
Wow, Ben.
Or if you would like to support the show and hear other anecdotes from our fun adventures in New York City and on tour, there's always After the Final Pop, which I would say is probably like when it comes to like all of our tiers out there, it's a real good bang for your buck. You get access to like the entire back catalog.
I know.
Like
if you're just entering now, there's like hours and hours of back catalog.
Yes. Yeah. So much to tune into. All of that is available when you sign up. Patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.